The payoff pitch on the way. Swung on a miss. Strike three. He's done it. Johan Santana has pitched a no-hitter. Put it in the books. In the history books.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome on in to the Mets Baseball Carnival. This is episode 9. I'm your host, Zach. You can follow me on Twitter at BraffZ. And as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Joe, who you can follow on Twitter at Joe_MetsBBC. It's been a while, Joe. How's everything on your end?
Yeah, man. It's been, I think, about 3 weeks since we last got together to put out a pod, but things are good. Baseball's back in official capacity. I'm excited. Really excited. Yeah, how about you?
I'm doing well. A lot has happened on the baseball front since we last spoke. We spoke before the Lindor extension took place, so I'm curious to get your initial feedback on everything. We'll touch upon this really quick before we get to the week of action here with games, but I know a lot of people were skeptical that this was going to happen, but deep down you kind of always had a feeling that this was going to work out. So tell me your initial thoughts on how everything went down.
Yeah, man. I mean, no surprise to me. And honestly, I mean, I don't think it should have been a surprise to really anyone, given the package that we had to give up to get Lindor. It was really a match made in heaven. You don't give up 8 to 9 years of controllable assets at that shortstop position to not bring in a guy like Lindor and sign him long term. You just don't, right? And with Cohen and not making that huge free agent splash, but doing it through the trade market with Lindor, giving him this long extension was an absolute no-brainer. Quite surprised that there was a little bit of the Broadway entertainment coming up to Lindor's self-imposed opening day deadline to get an extension done.
Yeah. The media fed off of that.
Oh, dude, hands down. I mean, I'm so skeptical of how that played out, in the sense that, one, this was the biggest no-brainer, I think, throughout this entire offseason since the Mets made the trade. But to have it come down to the very last moment, really like 45 minutes until midnight, yeah. Right? Talk about the 11th hour. And every media outlet, every tweet, every blog post, every news article was talking about this such dire situation where the Mets are not going to get it done. They're not getting it done. The two sides have not talked, like 48 hours going into the deadline. And as I said, 45 minutes before midnight, prior to opening day, deal's done. Everything's agreed to. It seemed like every reporter had some type of like long form article, like ready to rock the moment that news broke. So something fishy going on here I think that night after coming down from the excitement, from the high of the news actually breaking, they were all in cahoots. So, I mean, that's my feeling. I don't know if you shared the same thoughts or feelings about that, but.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely seemed like the media really wasn't as much in the know as they made it seem like they were. There was definitely some behind the scenes going on with Cohen and Sandy.
I disagree with that to a degree. I think they had to be in the know to some extent for it to go up until the 11th hour and the media having stories like ready to publish almost immediately. They have to be in the know to a degree.
They probably knew that this was a likely outcome. But like they weren't hearing updates on if Lindor's team and Cohen were talking. I mean, they probably didn't have that up-to-date information. But in the end, it got done, which is really all that matters.
Yeah, that is all that matters.
And he got more than Tatis. And I don't know how much that meant to him, but the 341 to the 340, I mean, I don't know. You're looking at the highest paid shortstop in the game. I think he's worthy of it. I mean, he's played more than Tatis. He's proven to be more healthy than Tatis, and that's looking like a little iffy right now, the Tatis deal, after he hurt his shoulder the other day. I mean, yeah. Who knows if that's going to linger on. But, I mean, Lindor has been pretty healthy throughout his entire career, so hopefully he lives up to this contract. This is the biggest contract the Mets have ever given out. And, yeah, I mean, we'll see if they lock up DeGrom, who they've talked about being in extension talks, and Conforto. Who knows? But we got the big one out of the way here, and it's a nice relief going into opening day. But before we got into opening day, we had some hiccups along the way where the Nationals came down with a COVID outbreak, and just a wild few days. And the Mets, I definitely think it hurt the Mets because they had some downtime, and just the consistency was off in their preparation. And yeah, I think it really hurt them, and it shows with these first three games here. Yeah, I mean, and DeGrom, I mean, let's get into the first game here. Obviously, 1 and 2 through three games here. Game one was DeGrom. He only went 77 pitches. I know that was the firestorm on Twitter. Should he have been removed? Should they have kept him in? What are your thoughts on how the DeGrom situation was handled in game one once they did come back?
Yeah, I mean, 8 days between competitive events, if you want to call spring training competitive, but getting on the field up against some competition, it was 8 days between, excuse me, 8 days between their final spring training game and what turned out to be the first game of the 2021 season for the Mets. Look, I think in the moment, seeing DeGrom pulled after 77 pitches, not considering, or at least looking at it within a silo, you're wondering why, right? He was cruising, and again, he was only at 77 pitches, and then they had the lead. When you consider the layoff and their inability to start the season on time, it makes a little bit more sense. I know Jake backed up Rojas' decision to pull him in his post-game presser, which you would never expect Jake to not be a team player, so to speak. So no surprise there in him agreeing with the move. But look, those 8 days definitely hurt them. If it was a normal opening day start on the 1st of April and he's at that same juncture at 77 pitches, I think he's going out there to throw at least 95. Barring any type of like real issue or real trouble he faced later in the game. But I think with the layoff, that's the reason why they were much more conservative with his workload opening day. So,
yeah, I agree. I don't think this is going to happen all that often. I mean, we may have the debates if he should have won an extra inning or so, but I think the pitch counts are ultimately going to be around 90 to 100, if not even more, depending on game flow. And I think he's going to go deeper into games. I think if this was a little bit later on, I think he would have pushed to stay in the game. But yeah, I think they were just being a little bit cautious, especially with the layoff time and him being out of his normal routine. So I would have liked to have seen him go in the extra inning, but you know, it's the first start of the year. It is what it is. I'm not going to harp on it too much here. The thing that really has been aggravating me over these first three games is what is Luis Rojas doing with this lineup? Some questionable calls. I mean, we saw in spring training him basically come out and say that Nimmo is going to be their leadoff guy if he's playing. So what happens in game one? Nimmo is batting eighth. And another topic that we discussed all offseason long was Dom Smith. Dom Smith was benched for Kevin Pillar. And me and you talked about this on the side, how we think, you know, we could see this maybe in some DeGrom starts, just going defense first. But I was shocked when I saw Pillar in there at leadoff. Like, okay, if you want to play the defensive game, I get that. But I think Pillar probably could have been further down in the lineup and have Nimmo. I think he's getting too cute with going, he doesn't want to go lefty against lefty, which I get it, but you know, Nimmo has proven that he can get on base against lefties and still hit lefties. And so has Dom Smith. Dom Smith did really well against lefties last year. He had 283 and got on base at a 391 clip. Kevin Pillar, he's a better career hitter against lefties, but it's not like we're facing Clayton Kershaw here or vintage Cole Hamels. I mean, it's freaking Matt Moore, who was in Japan last year. I don't feel the need to go crazy and bench your one of your best left-handed hitters and bat the other top left-handed leadoff guy who gets on base further down the lineup. It didn't make much sense to me. I'm curious to get your thoughts on how the game one lineup was handled.
Yeah, very, very surprising. I think you have to chalk it up to putting the best defense behind Jake. He's a guy who's pitched a lot of bad luck. You don't want to have the defense be the reason why you end up losing a game. It tends to be the offensive side of things that keeps Jake from putting a W in that column.
And we did see a great play from Pilar in the beginning of the game.
It paid dividends in the first inning, right? But
do you think Nimmo makes that play?
I don't think Nimmo makes that play, to be honest. But, I mean, we'll never know. Either way, I think it's – probably also has something to do with the long layoff in terms of keeping your bench, I think, in game physically and mentally, coupled with the idea of putting the best defense behind Jake. But they may have some advanced stats that prove that, as you mentioned before, having him bat leadoff was a bit of a shocker, and I think it was a shocker to all of us, but they may have some advanced stats that indicate that position in the lineup at critical junctures in the game is not impactful, right? And they may feel the back end of the lineup would be in more leverage situations for whatever reason, right? I'm sure they're gaming the game and they're playing out scenarios, and that leadoff role may not just be impactful in the later stages of the game. Who knows? I mean, look, they brought in some technology, I think, from .72, some minds from .72, coupled with the expansion of their analytics department. Yep. Advances in machine learning, they may have data to back up the reasoning to bat him lead off, but I think it more so is just to put the best defense behind Jake. But again, very questionable opening day lineup.
Yeah, and I like the fact that they've added to their analytics department. It's something that's really been needed the past few years, but a lot of these scenarios, you can't overthink it. I mean, you got to play your best bats. If you're going for the defensive alignment, then yeah, I understand that. And Pilar is a better defender than Dom Smith. But I just, like we're saying, I don't understand why you bat Nimmo down other than just lefty on lefty. I mean, Nimmo can hit lefties. He can get on base. He drew 3 walks today or yesterday, I think it was. So it's doable. It was a little bit questionable to me. But yeah, it's unfortunate what happened with game one with DeGrom. I mean, this is what happens. DeGrom pitches a strong game and the bullpen blows it. I mean, what were your initial reactions to the bullpen in game one?
Here we go again. Honestly, I mean, we knew coming into the season that the bullpen, especially with Lugo going down for a short period of time, Drew Smith going down for a short period of time and not being on the opening day roster, we knew that the bullpen was going to be a area of concern. Did we think with Jake going game one and Luis putting the best foot forward in terms of the bullpen coming in behind him, did we think this was going to happen? No. But I mean, Casher looked good. May, I mean, was not as advertised one bit. He certainly wasn't pleased with himself per his postgame presser. Yeah. Which, I mean, he wanted to get into the game in game two the other night. So he somewhat redeemed himself.
Aaron Loop.
Yeah. Yep. So, look, again, you feel for Jake in this situation because he lives it every season. So I wasn't surprised at all by the bullpen blowing it.
Can't be shocked by it. But, yeah, I mean, it makes you wonder what they're going to do against some of these lefties in the division between Harper, Soto, Freeman. Is Aaron Loop going to be able to be that guy? Or are they going to have to call upon Jerry Blevins, who's done it before? Are they going to have to call on Joey Lucchese to be more of a bullpen role, which he kind of is in now due to the late start? I don't know. It feels like maybe they should have gone out and signed Justin Wilson, brought Wilson back, or Tony Watson, or another veteran lefty in there for the pen. But hopefully this is just opening day jitters here for this bullpen. Hopefully this doesn't linger on. Obviously not ideal. But, yeah, not the strong start that we would have liked to have seen. And like you said, I think we're really hurting without Seth Lugo here. I think he was a huge piece to this pen, and I think they're missing him right now in these high-leverage spots. So hopefully they can hang on until he gets back. But game two yesterday on Tuesday, some of the initial thoughts on game two was Jeff McNeil was in the seventh hole, he was in the sixth hole. I just feel like it's so low in the order for Jeff McNeil, but it just goes to show you, it was seventh. I had the opening day lineup up. McNeil batting seventh, that just feels super low to have Jeff McNeil in the order. It just shows you how deep our order is. But brought back Dom Smith for game two, thank God, because we were obviously all pretty shook up by that. And Stroman pitched very well, six innings, one earned run, two walks, three strikeouts. I don't think he's going to really pile up the strikeouts this year. I mean, we know his game, and that's a ground ball pitcher, and he got the job done, got a quality start from him, which is really all you can ask for. And like you said before, Trevor May rebounded, but another guy out of the pen, Jarius Familia, just nearly blew it and almost forced us to have to bring in Edwin Diaz to close it out. I mean, who can you trust at this point? You know, it's tough, and it's only two games in, but we got to be patient, right?
Choice but to be, right?
What are your thoughts on game two, how everything was handled? Were you okay with the lineup? What were your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I was more concerned with making sure that Dom got into the game. Thankfully for us, he started, and him and Pete went yard, which was great to see. Dom showing that he needs to be in the lineup every day. Lindor got his first RBI as a Met, which was great. Tough to lose JD though, hit by pitch in his first at bat. Thankfully for him, x-rays day after were both negative. So that's a good prognosis for him. So hopefully we see him back in the lineup soon. But I mean, what's concerning to me, independent of the win, the shakiness of the bullpen throughout this entire series, and we'll get to, game three of the rubber game, this team is not hitting with runners in scoring position. They're leaving too many men on base. Even with the win, they were only 1-for-6 with runners in scoring position. And that's usually not going to cut it. Well, we got really lucky with the Phillies pen kind of imploding a la 2020. I think they had like a 7 ERA in the pen last year.
Yep.
So they really showed their colors on Tuesday night. But without that, I mean, there's no reason why we should have won this game, to be honest. I think we had, three hits, and we were up like 6-1 or 6-2 at that point. So, I mean, this team is just, they're not hitting, like they should, or like we expect them to.
Yeah. And this is pretty common of the Mets. I feel like they struggle to get the bats going early in the season.
The 8-day layoff doesn't help. I mean, it really doesn't on all fronts.
I think it's going to take them like a week or so to kind of just heat up. But that's another thing that bothers me with Rojas. Like the everyday players, they need consistency. You can't be taking out Dom Smith after like a game or two just to get him rest. Like, come on, you had 4 days off. You don't need rest. Like these guys are 25, 26, like some of these guys. Like they're ready to go. Like you don't need to rest them. But I think some of the two big takeaways for me from game two was Dom Smith coming in and performing and showing, like you said, that he needs to be in the lineup every single day. I would say maybe once a week you can give him off and maybe go the defensive route for Jake or something. I'm okay with that. But if you do that, you bring Dom Smith in to pinch hit in the game that he's not in. Like you can't leave him on the bench.
Yeah, that was a huge missed opportunity in game one. Because I think it was, we're I don't even know if we were through the halfway point in the game, but the Mets had the bases loaded. I think Pilar's spot was up in the lineup.
Yeah, they left him in.
That would have been the perfect opportunity to bring in Dom and give this offense a chance to blow this game wide open with one swing of the bat. Huge missed opportunity.
Yep. Bring in Dom, and then if you're still worried about the defense, that's why you signed Almora.
Almora, well. Of course, yes.
Questionable call there.
Didn't make any sense.
Completely agree. And then the other thing that stood out to me was Brandon Nimmo. Like we said, he walked three times yesterday. He got on base. Like, that's what you want out of your leadoff guy. Like, stop messing with the order. I know it's only we're only two games in here, but don't say he's your leadoff guy and then on opening day put him in the eight hole just because there's a lefty on the mound. Don't do that. Don't overthink it, Luis. Please don't. I know you're not listening to this, but don't overthink it. So yeah, that's game two. Those are the takeaways I think from game two, and then game three on Wednesday. The thing that really got me going was Jeff McNeil not in the lineup. I understand Jeff McNeil is hitless through two games, but that doesn't tell the whole story. He's hitting the crap out of the ball right now.
Yeah, he is.
He's getting unlucky. He's right up there in his hard hit rate. He's barreling balls right now. He's barreling the ball almost 17% of the time. Granted, it's only like seven plate appearances here that we're talking about, but he's hitting the ball hard. Why would you try to get him out of the rhythm? Like, he's ready to break out. Like, why would you bench him? Why? I understand you're telling me you want to start, give Jonathan VR some ABs. Okay, I get that. But Jonathan VR is a bench player for this team. McNeil is supposed to be playing every day. These guys need to get in a routine. They need consistent at-bats, and that was one thing that was probably the one thing that really pissed me off when I saw the lineup for Wednesday's game.
Yeah, I mean, look, I really think the eight-day layoff is playing a huge part in the makeup of these lineups, right? Pilar's gotten substantial playing time thus far. VR's gotten substantial playing time thus far. Guillerme, by default of JD going down with the injury, these guys are getting playing time, and I think it's more meant to get them in the game, get them engaged, and then I think we should really judge lineup construction going forward, starting with the home opener on Thursday, right? Mm-hmm. And let's see how they construct the lineup throughout that stat homestand. Because I think that'll give you a good indication of how they are going to handle the rest of the season, right? I could see them getting a PR, VR, Pilar, and these guys in the lineup early on just to get them some exposure and have them be better participants off the bench going forward, right? Again, 8 days to sit down and do hit fungos for a week to these guys and have scrimmages, that's one thing, but like actual like in-game situations, you're not going to get a whole lot of that. So like, let's judge them going forward on the lineup construction, but it's to date, I mean, through the first three games, it's been quite shocking when they drop the lineups.
Agreed. We saw David Peterson on Wednesday. He had a rough first inning. Gave up the big home run to Alec Bohm and Breece Hoskins, actually, in the first. But he kind of settled down. I think there were some serious first-inning jitters from Peterson. You said you noticed him looking a little shaky out there, like literally shaking. But he kind of calmed down, gave you a couple of good innings of scoreless ball until the implosion in the fifth inning there. Take me through David Peterson's outing. What did you think of his performance and how he kind of turned things around and then ultimately unraveled?
Yeah, I mean, like two through four, I thought he pitched really well once he kind of calmed himself down through the first. I think there was one point in the first inning where you saw McCann from behind the plate just kind of like gesturing to him to like take it easy, slow down, take a deep breath. But like the guy's excited. He got a big cup of coffee last season. I think he's got a lot to prove. And with the opportunity with the Carrasco going down and having him slot at the back end of the rotation, this is a golden opportunity for him. And he doesn't want to waste it. And I think that played, or at least that showed in the first inning for him, getting today's start, to be honest. But
big difference from this year pitching in the stadium with fans compared to last year, where he was pitching in pretty much pure silence with nobody there. So it's a big difference.
They also didn't have any competition last year. This year there's competition. There's depth in the starting pitching, and right. So he's got a lot to lose in 2021.
Yeah, he's got a lot on the line, especially with Lucchese on his heels, yep, and the injured guys working their way back. So, yeah, you're right about that. Overall, this was kind of just another game to forget here. The Mets lost 8-2 on Wednesday. We saw Rhys Hoskins have himself a good game, and then JT Realmuto hit a three-run home run once they removed Peterson. First pitch, Jacob Barnes, right over the middle of the plate. Questionable pitch selection, maybe. Yeah, I don't know. Did he shake off McCann or no?
I don't think so. I don't think he would in that situation, to be honest. I think McCann was kind of beating himself up a bit behind the dish after JT hit that ball out. But I mean, I would have thrown breaking ball, but I mean, hindsight's always going to be 20/20. So
yeah.
Easy for me to say that from the seat.
And even though, I mean, Peterson gave up the four runs in the first, I mean, they had plenty of opportunities to chip away here. I mean, four runs 100%. In the first, I mean, it seems like a lot, but it's so early in the game. Like, there's plenty of time to come back, and they had a ton of opportunities, but they were 1-for-12 with runners in scoring position, so they just did not execute. Conforto really struggled.
He struggled this entire series.
Yeah. He left 9 guys on base on Wednesday.
Yeah, it's tough.
He definitely needs to get going. It's super early, but I think the layoff really hurt him as well. I know that – did he get the vaccine?
No, I think Thursday is the first day that it's being offered to the team.
Okay, that's what it was.
He's been outspoken through the pressers about it really being a personal decision, and that might be a company line on behalf of the Players Association.
That's what it seems like.
Yeah.
I was just wondering if maybe he was feeling any.
But he actually, he had COVID. I mean, I think that plays into his concern about getting a shot as well.
That was pretty crazy to find that out. He had it like
two weeks before opening
training
day.
Or opening day.
I think it was, I think maybe spring training.
Yeah.
That makes more sense. Yeah.
Hopefully that doesn't affect, he's not having any lingering effects from that. That would be unfortunate, but hopefully he can turn this around. I mean, only 3 games in, but yeah, not the best start for Conforto here. And then the bullpen for this game, I mean, we talked about Jacob Barnes, Dylan Betances, really still nothing too flashy. Gave up a run, really was not too high with his velocity yet again. I think he topped out at like 92, which is not what you want to see from Betances. But I guess the one thing that did look good was Joey Lucchese. Yeah. I'm not going to lie, I had the game turned off by then. But Lucchese
two strong innings.
Yeah, 2 strong scoreless innings. I'm curious to see what his role is going to be, especially with Luke being the only guy in the pen. And I think they were kind of going to have him available out of the bullpen early on. So we'll see how that plays out for Lucchese. But I don't know, man. The first 3 games, nothing overly exciting. I'm hoping that the weekend series at home is going to be much better. We got Taijuan Walker on the hill Thursday for the home opener. And we'll see DeGrom again this weekend. And who else is slated to – who's slated for Friday?
It's a great question.
I'm blanking right now.
Yeah, same here.
Let's look it up, shall we? We got Walker – oh, really? the computer is spazzing out as we do this. But I'm excited to see Taijuan Walker. I think he is going to have a really solid season for this team. And, what are you looking forward to with the home opener? Is there anything that kind of stands out to you?
Yeah, I mean, fans back in the stands at City, which is going to be great to see. I'm excited to see Taijuan. especially after he basically broke the Lindor news. Really, I mean, I think he tweeted at some time around the 10:45. He said he had news to break, but he was going to wait 30 minutes for it. And he basically teased the entire fan base for about 25 minutes. I think his next tweet was that he's like excited to play baseball or something like that. Something like just very like generic. And then he tweeted after that, like he's excited to see DeGrom get the opening day start. And then like immediately after that was the Lindor news. I think John Heyman broke it, that the two were in agreement.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, I mean, you can give credit to Taiwan situation. I mean, I was ready to go to sleep, to be honest. I was ready to shut my phone down. I was so discouraged up until that moment.
And then broke the news to me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he tweeted that out. I'm like, all right, you know what? I'm going to stay up for 30 more minutes. Let's see what happens. Like,
yep.
What a coincidence, right? So, yeah, and I got to break the news to you, which was exciting.
Usually it's the other way around.
Yeah, for sure.
So the Mets have off on Friday, which I didn't realize.
Yes, that is the in the instance in which opening day gets rained out. For any reason, gotcha. They have that as a backup. So
Taiwan Walker is Friday. Or it is tomorrow, excuse me. Yeah. Thursday for the home opener. Off Friday. DeGrom is going Saturday against Trevor Rogers. And then Stroman will go on Sunday.
Gotcha.
And then we get the Phillies again next week. Ugh, that should be...
Hopefully a different outcome.
I hope so. Hopefully the home atmosphere will really boost this team's confidence. And hopefully we start hitting by next week here. It's a big series. The Marlins have been struggling as well. The Marlins are 1-5 right now. They're really not hitting either. So this could be just what the Mets need right now.
Yep.
Need that home atmosphere and another struggling team. So
aren't the Braves struggling too?
They are. They had a decent game on Wednesday. I think they won. But yeah, they haven't looked great. I know Ozzy Albies hasn't gotten a hit yet.
Yeah.
So some of these big stars, they're struggling early on, but it's not all that uncommon. So another thing I wanted to bring up, we were talking about this before, the Mets kind of dodged a bullet on some of these big free agent signings, like George Springer. He was banged up. He hit the IL. What was it? His oblique, I think, or shoulder. I'm not sure. But he re-aggravated something. I think he re-aggravated a quadricep injury. So he's out indefinitely now.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of dodged a bullet with that. I mean, Springer's he's had his fair share of injuries over his career. And for a 30-year-old center fielder, it's not the best sign if you're signing a long-term deal. So I think we may have dodged a bullet early on that one. Two other guys that were on the Mets radar, Trevor Rosenthal. A lot of people were interested in him as a bullpen piece. He had a great year last year, big comeback year last year, and he's on the shelf now. Could be a while. I think thoracic outlet syndrome surgery was recommended for him, so that's not ideal. And then James Paxton, who they were looking at for rotation depth, he left the game yesterday with elbow or forearm soreness, all in that general area, and that's never a good sign when you're talking elbow or forearm. So we kind of dodged a bullet there. Hopefully Taiwan Walker stays healthy, and that's kind of the piece that we ended up going with, and Lindor locked him up. So hopefully it works out. But that kind of wraps up. I mean, it's been a weird couple of days of baseball for this team, and then just the lack of baseball the first couple of days with opening day. Such an odd opening day with every other team in action except for us. Just not the ideal opening day scenario for your squad. But we're back in action now. We got a big home series, the opening home series coming up here against the Marlins. Hopefully they come out on top and add some wins to the win column. But that kind of wraps things up. Anything else you want to add tonight, Joe?
No, man. I think we covered everything we've missed and recap the opening series, which I went in another direction, but got some first out of the way, first win, Lindor's first hit, Dom and Pete getting off to a good start with a long ball. So there's some decent takeaways from this first series, but I'm excited. I mean, it's still early. There's still what, 158 more of these to go, 159 more of these to go. So
it's going to be a long season.
Yeah, man.
Hopefully if all goes well, I mean, we're playing baseball until October.
I hope so, man.
That seems like
that's Cohen's expectation.
Very far from now.
He thinks it's a playoff team. And, no. I mean, it should be. It should be. So we'll see.
I don't think the wife is going to be too happy if this is going on until October. But she doesn't have a choice. All right, everybody. Well, thanks for listening to our recap here of the first couple of days of the season. We'll keep at it and give us a follow on Twitter at MetsBBCarnival. You can follow myself, Zach, on Twitter at BrafC. You can follow Joe on Twitter at Joe_MetsBBC. And we'll try and I don't know if we're going to like live tweet some games, but definitely just keep an eye on our Twitter. I'm sure you'll be getting some comments from us during some live action games and everything. But yeah, just give us a follow and subscribe and review on iTunes or Spotify or wherever you listen. And yeah, we'll catch you guys next time. Thanks for listening.